The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder, if there is only one God, how come there are so many different opinions articulated by Christians? Well, my friend, the Bible does communicate the truth about God and how he incarnated himself as Jesus Christ, but often Christians argue about matters that are not even mentioned in the Bible, or public figures who are not mentioned in the Bible, such as Trump, or for another example, Trump. And then there's always, of course, Trump. Are you tired of hearing about Trump? Me too. I don't blame you, but he's not going away, is he? Dealing with Trump is unavoidable, and so it happened. It finally happened. Donald Trump is the presumptive GOP nominee. The liberal media is salivating because they are just sure that Hillary will beat him. The GOP Golf and Country Club establishment is aghast because they, too, are sure Hillary will beat him, although a few of them aren't so sure and instead want to be sure. They actually want Hillary to win. Yes, some of these elitist Republicans are actually calling for Republicans to stay home and help Hillary get elected for the sake of keeping our Republican Party movement pure. Otherwise, according to them, Donald Trump will rewrite the very meaning of Republican. How they wish that an electable moderate like John Kasich or Jeb Bush could have taken the nomination. True. That moderate stuff didn't work too well for McCain or Romney, but never mind that right now. Got to keep the party pure. Everything is about the party. The country's going to hell in a handbasket, but let's protect the party. And then within the Republican Party, we have another group, a more honest, sincere group, driven not by power, but genuine ideology and values. These people are called conservatives. And many of these conservatives are also depressed over the Trump victory. Not all of them. Conservatives are split almost down the middle. Some are licking their wounds from the defeat of Ted Cruz. They were hoping for a contested convention. They do share one thing in common with Trump supporters, but only one. They were just as disenchanted with the spineless GOP establishment. The problem is, they don't trust Trump either. They don't view him as a real conservative. They are disgusted by the foul insults that come out of Trump's mouth. They were shocked at the name-calling and mudslinging. They put zero faith in his promises. And they have seen him change positions more times than a gymnast on a balance beam. They feel that a vote for Trump is a vote against their conscience and against heartfelt convictions and against God. So how do we navigate through these disappointing and turbulent waters? Is there any hope left? Anything Christians and other conservatives can do? Yes, as a matter of fact, you can admit that Trump was not your first choice. Not even your second choice. He may have been at the bottom of the 17 Republican candidates, but he did get the nomination. That alone is not a reason to vote for him. Preventing another 4 years of the liberal destructive policies of Barack Obama is a reason. And that is just exactly what we will get if Hillary, Bernie, or frankly any other Democratic candidate wins this fall. And so you may need to vote for Trump. That will be hard, I know. You'll need to plug your nose while you do it, but difficult as that may be, it needs to be done. And I'll tell you something else, my friends. That won't be the hardest part. You'll have an even bigger task first before you even get a chance to vote, and that's persuading other conservatives to also vote for Trump. Oh, well, Bob, now you're just asking the impossible. It may seem that way, but it can be done. How? By pointing out that you are not so much for Trump as against Hillary. By making it clear that there are many other GOP candidates that you would have preferred, but now you are being a realist instead of a fatalist. Next, and this is extremely important, part of a fine art called compartmentalization, point out that there are two different kinds of Trump supporters. This is so key. Let me say it again. There are two different kinds of Trump supporters, the groupies and the realists. I will be in the second camp. You, if you want to know how to do this, will be in the second camp and be willing to be critical of the first camp, those who defend the man, right or wrong, and follow him as if he's some kind of messiah. Let's be honest. Many of Trump's groupies are marching in lockstep for the same reasons people followed Obama in 2008. Blind, uncritical, emotional euphoria based on charisma and talking points that don't offer a lot of substance. Make America great again! Hope and change, they almost sound the same. Because without elaboration, nobody really knows what they mean. Ironically, many in the anything goes with Trump camp are true conservatives who detest the policies of Barack Obama. How sad that they now follow another iconic figure for the exact same reasons. But you, my friend, would be another kind of Trump supporter, a different kind of Trump supporter. You are not a groupie. You are a realist. You're not so naive as to portray the man as a conservative. He's not a conservative. Who are we kidding? He's a populist who skillfully felt the pulse of an angry, betrayed crowd. At the moment, he's a populist who's articulating a few conservative values. Now, that's not as good as a real, honest-to-goodness conservative, but it's light years from allowing the leftists to completely control our country. Not only will you admit that Trump is a populist, you will point out that he's a very flawed populist at that. And you will admit his flaws, not as a quick obligatory disclaimer, but as one who's very concerned. And you are concerned enough to actually list these problems. You will point out that much as Trump calls other people liars, he has lied himself many, many, many times. You can even cite examples. He claimed George Bush was responsible for 9/11, and then the days that followed tried to walk it back a little by saying, well, Bush may have been responsible. Politicians are notorious for claiming they didn't really say what they said. Even when we live in the age of video and YouTube to play it back within seconds, they still explain what they truly meant because they have been led to believe they can get away with it. They all do it. And Trump, the self-proclaimed non-politician, has been quite political himself. That's only one of countless examples. The man speaks without a filter, then thinks about what he said the next day. Upon better judgment, he adjusts his position. The adjustment is fine, but it should be accompanied by an apology or at least an honest admission. He should simply admit he was wrong instead of trying to spin it. And so Trump realists will be honest, even when Trump himself isn't. And you can continue to scrutinize Trump's problematic track record on both social issues and foreign policy. He's been all over the map. For a single-payer system, against a single-payer system. For abortion, against abortion. He woos evangelicals, yet when asked, he cannot name any personal examples of having asked God for forgiveness. He holds up the Bible as a good book to read, only slightly higher on the list than his own book. He's a man who at any time could say anything, do anything, or stand for anything. And yet, scary as this profile looks, there is another side. Unless our country is already headed down a road without any turns, which it may very well be, something needs to stop us dead in our tracks. The brass and tactlessness of Trump may make some flinch, but it is still satisfying to see somebody who does not consult a politically correct dictionary before talking. Meanwhile, there's more than brass. There has been a modicum of substance, hopefully the tip of a bigger iceberg. While Trump groupies only memorize his talking points, Trump realists have listened to some of his meatier speeches. When the detail is offered, it's not that bad. Should the man surround himself with a conservative cabinet, maybe even some of the people he ran against, we might see his business executive experience kick in. The experience of knowing that one must listen to advice and consider all angles before making a decision. He has gone on record as saying he will at least take the advice of generals more seriously than Obama did. That alone is significant, given the turbulent mess Obama's going to leave the next president with. As for the way Trump insults his opponents, let me say something about insults. An insult is abominable if it was a statement that was unnecessary and if it was a statement that was untrue. And such was the case when Trump used insults during the primary. That will not be the case in the general election, or at least it doesn't have to be. If Trump were to go after Hillary with the same fervor used for Rubio, Bush, Cruz, and the others, we might just experience that rarity of rarities, a Republican presidential candidate winning an election for a change. Not that we would want him to be cruel or brass, but here's the thing. He wouldn't need to be. With Hillary, all he'd have to do is speak the truth. Both Mitt Romney and John McCain walked on eggshells to not insult Obama in 2008 and 2012, and all they would have had to do was speak the truth. But they were surrounded by campaign strategists who warned them again and again to avoid being offensive. Therein lies the Republican trap. Democrats are not shy about attacking, even if the attack is a downright lie. Harry Reid shamelessly commented on Romney's tax returns without offering a shred of evidence. President Obama claimed Republicans want dirty air and dirty water. None of this matters to the Democrats. It works. Without hesitation, they lie about Republicans, yet Republican candidates will not even grow enough spine to speak the truth about Democrats. And there is a lot of truth to be spoken, truth which puts a spotlight on lies, from lies about Benghazi to lies about healthcare to lies about Fast and Furious. Trump will not be so timid.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
Donald Trump, Big surprise that we were going to talk about that today, right? With all that went on last week and him finally getting the nomination, presumably. And I'm trying to compartmentalize things by saying there are two kinds of Trump supporters. The kind we've had up to now, Trump groupies, and the kind we need to have now, Trump realists. He was my least favorite, well, almost my least favorite out of the 17. But now, because our choices are so limited, I guess I've become a Trump realist. And we were talking a little bit about the fact that if Trump used the same fervor with which he went after Republicans and went after the Democrats in this election, without making things up, without insulting the way people look, but just putting a spotlight on Benghazi, healthcare, Fast and Furious, all these other things where we've just been hearing so many downright lies, this could be very effective. He has shrewdly calculated that conservatives are tired of the mealy-mouthed approach. They want a candidate who takes on his adversary as if he were stepping into a ring. They want somebody to fight for their values, even if they are uncertain how much he actually shares those values. Now, let me offer a couple of analogies, and I have used these analogies before over the air, but I'm going to use them again today because of the timing and because they're very important. Let me remind you once again that during World War II, General Patton's superiors were often worried. The man was a romantic who seemed to love war for war's sake. He might have been just as happy to fight the Russians as the Germans. He had no tact whatsoever and was regarded by many as a fanatic, but he turned out to be a fanatic we needed. His stubbornness, resolve, and even ego contributed greatly to the defeat of the Nazis. Think of this as a last-ditch, 11th-hour, unconventional drug that a doctor tries on a dying patient when nothing else works. The doctor doesn't promise that his latest idea will work either. He merely says, we better try it. Now, there's still a lot of objections to this, and let me anticipate some of them. But Bob, Trump is a racist and a sexist. My friend, no, he is not. He does have a lot of problems. I just listed a lot of them. He's got a ton of problems. Those are not among them. I'd like to be very clear on this. Yes, he has insulted women, but you probably noticed that he insults men just as much. He pops off at anybody who confronts him, and he does so as a quick knee-jerk reaction. His big mouth is an equal opportunity weapon. As for racism, though, nobody can look into another person's heart. But if we're going to judge the man by words and deeds, at least since he started running for office, I'm not looking at a profile of his entire life. I haven't studied him that carefully. But while he's been running for office has been the time people have claimed he's been saying racist things. And he did not say one single solitary racist thing during this election year. He said things people want to interpret that way and perceive that way, such as his desire to protect our borders. Ladies and gentlemen, does a desire to protect our borders mean that one hates Hispanics? If so, then explain why so many Hispanic Americans support Trump. I know. Many Hispanic Americans don't support him, but many do. You don't hear as much about that. As for the idea of vetting Muslim immigrants more carefully, it's time to take a deep breath and offer our bleeding heart country a small education. Islam is not a race. I hate to break it to you. Islam is not a race. Islam is not a nationality. It's a religion. And Trump is not talking about outlawing the religion. Neither is he talking about deporting Muslim American citizens. He's simply saying that we should vet a little more carefully because presently, a lot of brutal terrorist attacks are coming in the name of Islamic Jihad. Now, he says this for a very interesting reason, because it happens to be the truth. Look, criticize the man when he lies. Don't criticize him when he speaks the truth. And he's gotten far more criticism for the times when he speaks the truth. By the way, the Democrats will portray any Republican nominee as racist and sexist. You think they weren't going to say that about Ted Cruz? Give me a break, Ted Cruz, with his allegedly horrible backwoods views about our borders and traditional marriage and the audacity to return to a strict reading of our Constitution instead of legislating for the bench, they would have come after Cruz far more. I still would have preferred Cruz. But we need to be honest. They would have come after him more. And not just him. They would have portrayed moderate self-proclaimed nice guy John Kasich that way. You don't think so? He got in trouble with feminists for discouraging women college students from drinking too much at a party. Mitt Romney was a moderate. They called him a racist for being a Mormon. They called him a sexist for having the names of women he wanted to consider hiring in a binder. They'll call anybody anything to win. But now here's another twist on this, and here we're looking into the soul, as it were, of the GOP, not only the GOP political establishment, but some of the columnists and others. You're thinking, Bob, some in the GOP media have a plan. People such as George Will would like to see Hillary win against Trump. They say that since Trump doesn't truly represent the Republican Party, that more damage would be done to our brand should Trump win than if Hillary won. After all, Hillary will do such a bad job, and people will see it, and then in 4 years, we can nominate a genuine conservative. My friend, that all looks good on paper. The problem is we won't survive another 4 years as a free nation, not with the vacancies that are likely to open up on the Supreme Court. Once we have a completely liberal Supreme Court, it won't matter anymore who the president is or which party is running Congress. Our country right now is an oligarchy. The will of the people on the ballot measure is no longer running our country. For all intents and purposes, we are not a democratic republic. We are an oligarchy and a dictator whose decisions are canonized by this oligarchy under whitewashed terms such as judicial review or executive orders. Oligarchy, dictatorship. As for Americans getting the lesson of their lives after a Hillary presidency and wising up before the 2020 election, ladies and gentlemen, Obama already did an abysmal job during his first term and he was reelected because the people did not wise up. At least not enough of them. When politicians pit the haves versus the have-nots and promise a lot of free stuff, people would rather support the hand that feeds them than actually think and concern themselves with the direction of our country. But Bob, doesn't it ring hollow that Trump now calls for unity after dividing Republicans, and not only Republicans, but passionate conservatives within the party? Yes, of course it rings hollow. Realistic Trump supporters should be the first to point out that it is Trump who must make the first efforts toward unity. That is, with his rival candidates. He owes them much. The GOP establishment, that's another story. True, some in the establishment are biting the bullet and supporting Trump, but they were scheming to take him out at a contested convention, and some are still scheming. What about Romney? What about the Bushes? What about our Speaker of the House? Remember, this same GOP establishment asked Trump to take a pledge that he would support the nominee should he lose. We'll never know if Trump would have kept that pledge. I suspect he wouldn't. But that could only be answered definitively in alternative universes. In this universe, it is Trump who secured the nomination. And for all the talk about supporting the nominee, now we are waiting to see if it works both ways. Jeb Bush took a pledge to support the nominee. Jeb Bush has already vocally said he's going to break the pledge.
This is Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480539, W&S Electric.
Looking for a new book you won't be able to put down? Push the Winds Around is a romance set in the context of science fiction. Dr. Brandon Krieger is given the opportunity of a lifetime, a psychologist's dream. Through the usage of his physics professor friend's time machine, Brandon travels 20 years back through time in an attempt to change one man's destiny. Tom Kyle, a convicted and unremorseful murderer, is located in the past when he was a 6-year-old boy. Brandon's mission? To alter Tom Kyle's path and prevent him from being a vicious killer. Matters are complicated when Brandon finds himself falling in love with young Tom's mother. Push the Winds Around, a novel by Bob Siegel. Available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Grudgingly, I'm supporting the only Republican candidate we have left. He was not my first choice or second or third. You could go down the list. He wasn't at the top at all. But I will support him as opposed to the alternative. And I'm talking about the hypocrisy of the mainstream Republican GOP establishment that because of Trump, because they were afraid of him bolting, they actually asked him to take a pledge and to make it look like they were being consistent. They asked everybody to take a pledge that they would support the nominee. Jeb Bush took that pledge and now has openly said he will not support Trump. I don't think he said, "I'm violating my pledge" in so many words. I think if you asked him, he'd explain that, well, he has different information now than he had when he made that pledge. Yeah, different information. Different information was that when he took the pledge, he was just sure Trump wasn't going to get the nomination. We're going to stop him. People want a moderate. People want someone like me. I'm the heir apparent. After all, my dad and my brother were president. He didn't expect this to happen, so he didn't think he had anything to lose by taking the pledge. Now, Trump took the pledge, too. Trump said that he would not run as a third-party candidate so long as the Republican Party treated him fair. I think if Trump had lost, he would have interpreted that as not being treated fair. I want to be very honest. I really don't think Trump would have kept the pledge either, but I can't say that for sure because we don't know. It did not go that way. But Bob, doesn't the GOP have a right to be concerned that the establishment is only critical of Trump because he's not a true conservative? Their problem is they want a true conservative to represent their values. Oh, yeah? Listen, they had a true conservative in Cruz, and they hated him even more. And why? Because Cruz, as a senator, had the audacity to try to keep his campaign promises and challenge his fellow Republican senators to do the same. And how was he rewarded? Well, the most recent reward is from former Speaker John Boehner calling Ted Cruz Lucifer. Now, nobody who really cares about the conservative movement would say such a thing. Would Cruz have been a better choice than Trump? Absolutely. There is no comparison. There's nothing to even think about. But ladies and gentlemen, that ship has sailed. Deal with it. And when the GOP establishment acts like their concern for Trump is that he's not conservative enough, it is difficult for them to make such comments with a straight face. When have they ever been conservative enough? We gave them back the House in 2012 and they did nothing. We gave them back the Senate in 2014 and they did nothing. They could have defunded Obamacare. They could have defunded his amnesty executive orders. They could have done a lot of things. They were abysmal failures. They worried about how Obama would portray them. They worried about how the media would portray them. They worried about pleasing everybody in this country except the voters who had already spoken and put them in office. Their failure left a vacuum that Trump filled. They created Donald Trump. Now they need to suck it up and live with their decision. But Bob, my conscience will not allow me to vote for a man like Trump. Okay, I respect that. Let me ask you a question. Will your conscience allow a liberal Supreme Court? Even when Scalia was still alive, the court was hit and miss. There were at that time 4 liberals, 4 conservatives, and 1 swing voter, Kennedy, whose decisions seemed to be pulled out of a mystery grab bag every time they met. Do you think Hillary or Bernie or any other liberal Democrat will support a Supreme Court justice who allows the vote of the people to prevail instead of legislating from the bench? What will happen to free speech? What will happen to religious liberty? They barely exist right now. They are being suspended by a very thin thread. 4 years of a Democratic administration appointing more Supreme Court justices, tipping it so that it's an all-liberal court, and you may just not recognize the country you grew up in. Oh, it'll still be on the map. It'll still be called the United States of America. But that's going to be about it. Yeah, well, Bob, I'm not voting for the lesser of two evils. The alternative to the lesser of two evils is the greater of two evils. Okay, let's move to the bottom line. In summary, I am not calling anybody to be a Trump groupie, but rather a Trump realist. As a realist, if you've been listening to me this first half of the program, I have been painfully honest about his flaws. But I have also defended him as much as I practically can. The areas you see as strengths are still uncertainties, partly because the man is a volatile loose cannon, and partly because nobody can predict the future anyway about anybody. And so our menu choice is a man who is unpredictable or a Democrat who will be entirely predictable. Given that choice, we would be wiser to roll the dice. Well, let's switch gears a little bit. Happy Mother's Day to everybody. I'm joined here by my lovely wife, Dana. She's not on the mic, but she's in the studio. She's a wonderful mother. I miss my own mother who passed away a few years ago, but she did live to be 93 years old. And the Bible talks a lot about the importance of mothers and the importance of fathers. And you'll be interested to know that recently there is an archaeological expedition where they found some material written on ancient papyri around the time of the Bible, where we got some quotations, not from famous Bible characters, but the mothers of famous Bible characters. Now, this is fascinating stuff. So we took it, we translated it, we interpreted it, and oddly enough, who would have thought there's 10 of them? Almost in the tradition of David Letterman, we present today on the Bob Siegel Show top 10 list of biblical mothers' famous sayings, starting, of course, with the 10th and working to the first one. Number 10, Jesus' mother. Of course you're Jewish, half Jewish on your mother's side. You have to think about that one a little bit. Moses' mother, there were two quotations from her. Moses, when he was a little kid, his mother said, "Would you stop parting your chicken soup and just eat it?" And then this is Moses' mother again, the Jewish mother. "I don't understand that kid. He sits in the bathtub for hours and he never gets wet." How about Samson's mother? "Put your father down now." Here's an interesting one. Mary Magdalene's mother. "Why, any pastor would be happy to have you in his church, especially if their Sunday morning numbers are down. Remember, demon-possessed people are counted more than once." How about Cain and Abel's mother, Eve? "What did I do when I got suspicious that your father was cheating on me? Well, every night after he went to sleep, I counted his ribs." Bob Siegel. Looking for a church? Maybe not. Perhaps you've had your fill of churches. Maybe you even grew up in the church. Maybe as a kid you were dragged to Sunday school against your will. Maybe you used to throw spit wads as Mrs. Pumpernickel tried desperately to interest you in the missionary journeys of the Apostle Paul. You may have grown up listening to long sermons, anxiously looking at your watch to see how much of the game you were missing at home on TV as the pastor made his 97th point. Or perhaps you were not raised as a Christian at all. Instead, you have merely encountered Christians. Maybe some obnoxious personality tried to shove the gospel down your throat using all the tact of a lawnmower in a barber shop. Well, my friend, perfect Christians don't exist because perfect people don't exist. That's why Jesus died for our sins. So I'm not going to tell you that the people of Skyline Church are perfect. I'm just going to tell you that we come real close.
No. Actually, you'll just find people who struggle with life the same as you. But we're honest about the struggle, and we help each other with the struggle. What you will find is a church that takes the love of Jesus Christ seriously. After all, his message is one of mercy and inclusion, and we don't need 97 points to talk about God. Ask anybody. Our sermons have never made more than 96 points. Skyline Church at 94 in Hamishaw, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. The Bob Siegel Show, 1170, The Answer. And I was going through a top 10 list of things biblical mothers said about their sons. Little known information that we have here. We heard from Jesus' mother. We heard from Moses' mother, Samson's, Mary Magdalene's mother, even Cain and Abel's mother, Eve. Let's hear now from John the Baptist's mother. We have four more of these. What did John the Baptist say to little John when he was younger? Well, little John sounds like Robin Hood, but this was little John the Baptist. She said, yes, you do have a middle name. It's the. Okay, how about Esau's mother, Rebecca? Seriously? Seriously, for a single meal? You gave up your birthright for a single meal? What? I don't care if you supersized it first. Who cares? How about Peter's mother? I'll ask you one more time if you stole a cookie from the cookie jar. The answer is one yes or one no. Denying it three times just makes you sound suspicious. Now, the last one's a little bit dark, but, you know, we're a little bit on the cutting edge here on this show. Judas Iscariot's mother. I know, yikes. Judas Iscariot's mother trying to encourage Judas. You're going to be famous someday. Just you wait and see. If you put all your mind to it, there's nothing you can't accomplish. See, my wife is frowning. She's looking at me like, you had to read that on Mother's Day, right? Okay. Well, all right. Let's look at some emails. If you'd like to weigh in on any of these things, you're always welcome to get a hold of me, Facebook, Twitter, and of course, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel, S-I-E-G-E-L. Now, this email is from one of our listeners who specifically went out of his way to ask that he be made anonymous. So I'm going to read his comment, but not his name, not even his first name. Bob, I enjoyed listening to your show last Sunday, which included your wife discussing her healing seminar for women who've experienced abortions. I would like to make a $130 donation to the seminar to help a woman who doesn't have the financial resources to attend the seminar. Please send me some info on where to send my donation. Well, thank you so much, my friend, for offering this very generous donation. Dana was very excited when I talked to her about it, and Dana has since gotten back to this gentleman. It was at that time that he said he wished to remain anonymous when he interacted with Dana. What's so impressive here is that Dana and I last week did not come on and ask for any contributions. We merely talked about her seminar coming up, her retreat. And we mentioned that if any women could not afford to come to the retreat, we would help them out. And here, somebody just decides on his own to make a contribution and with the humility to request that his name not even be mentioned. Well, I am honoring his request, but I still wanted to acknowledge his gesture. What an example of the love of Christ. Thank you once again. Now, last week, we spent a lot of time talking about the new bathroom transgender policy at Target. All kinds of comments from Facebook, responding to things I said about this. Patty, Becky, Dan, Melinda, Roxanne, Christine, Karen, Ron, Denise, Linda, Brendan, among many, many others, are all disgusted by what Target is doing. Peter says, try this one. Andre Breivik, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, this is something from the foreign news. Andre Breivik, Norway mass murderer, recently won a case where he claimed being subject to inhumane treatment in prison. One of his claims is that he was frequently strip searched. He was particularly upset with the strip searches because they were often in front of a female officer. Now, for the sake of argument, if that female officer claimed that she identified as a man, would Breivik have the same inhumane circumstances to claim? Well, Peter, you don't want to confuse people by giving them a real-life illustration and seeing how it really works in the real world. You just don't want to do that. Fran, speaking about this, says unreal. Just one word, unreal. Russ says, given Target's new policy, this guy made only three mistakes. Now, we were talking, I mentioned last week that there was somebody who recently got arrested for bringing his cell phone and using it as a video camera in the women's undressing rooms at Target. And he was arrested and he was going to trial. And then I just mentioned if he had gone in there without the camera and he had just claimed that he was really a woman in a man's body. Anyway, so that's how this all began. There was the irony. So Russ is commenting on this other wrinkle in Target's news, the man that was arrested. So Russ says, given Target's new policy, this guy made only three mistakes. One, he was filming without permission, which is not legal. Two, he wasn't wearing a dress. Three, he didn't tell the arresting officers, I just feel like I'm being a woman today. Well, that's interesting, Russ, although actually, according to this new rule, you don't even have to be wearing the dress. All you have to do is say, I identify from being a woman. Now, this next one is from Tim. Tim actually called the show last week. He was on during the last segment. Tim and I always have respectful conversations, although we're usually disagreeing, but then we usually find things to agree about, too. But this is, I've got a rather long email from Tim. He says, Bob, thanks for letting me on the air with you. You'll recall the point I was calling about was you spoke about the guy in the store posted in this Facebook thread. And then you said, let me get this straight. A man gets arrested for invading a woman's privacy in a dressing room. But if another man went into a woman's dressing room or women's restroom at Target and claimed he was not really a man, he felt like he was a woman, he could get away with it. That is it verbatim. When I brought this up, you moved off of it pretty darn quick, and I didn't get a chance to discuss it. The point I wanted to make is that while I do support and defend the right of people to express their opinions, we also have to acknowledge the responsibility we have with the opinions we express. In your position with a radio show, when you make comments like this, there are going to be more than a few people who necessarily equate transgendered people with this type of criminal activity. Even when, as you acknowledged later, this was a crime independent of any gender issues and that the guy was not transgendered. When you compared the Target criminal with a transgendered man using a woman's restroom, it was easy to hear it as you thought transgendered person could get away with criminal videotaping. Okay, we got more of Tim's pretty long letter, and then I will respond when we return.
The verdict is in on Bob Siegel's novel, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. Readers love it, and they say as much in their customer reviews, reviews such as this one. Like the Chronicles of Narnia in the last century, the story is fun and mysterious, appropriate for adults as well as kids, and should become a classic. I won't even give any spoilers, but I will say that I couldn't put it down. It makes a point without being preachy. There are twists and turns and a great ending. Like the title object, the story challenges your thinking without leaving you in despair. This book would make an excellent Christmas gift for yourself or others, and it can be enjoyed at any time of the year. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Welcome back to our program. I was in the middle of a letter from Tim. Tim, who I was on the show last week, called in. We were talking about this whole issue with Target and transgender. So let me read the last few lines again of what I was reading before we went to the break. Tim says, in your position with a radio show, when you make comments like this, there are going to be more than a few people who necessarily equate transgendered people with this type of criminal activity. Even when, as you acknowledge later, that this was a crime independent of any gender issues and that the guy was not transgendered. When you compared the Target criminal with a transgendered man using a woman's restroom, it was easy to hear it as you thought transgendered person could get away with criminal videotaping. But even if your use of the phrase get away with it only was referring to get away with simply being there, there still is a direct comparison to a sexual predator. Whether intended or not, this kind of talk, which is too common on the right, has a tendency to equate things like being gay or transgendered with a higher propensity for criminal predatory sexual misconduct. That is a subtext that I think right-wing pundits need to acknowledge and deal with. I'm not saying it's intentional, but it sure does sound like it too often. I can promise you there are people listening to your show who actually think this way and hear it this way, thinking that you are reinforcing their naive and potentially dangerous misconceptions. To be clear, I am not advocating extreme policies. You oppose... his wording's a little awkward here. To be clear, I am not advocating extreme policies you oppose from the left-wing politicians either. Okay, he had the word "your" in there. Innocent typo. He says, but I do know young children who are dealing with these gender issues. Talk to their parents. It's not as simple as just pushing them to a psychologist or a pastor to fix something that is broken about them. It is something intrinsic and expressed at an incredibly young age. I won't pretend to understand it because I don't, but I think it is vital that we acknowledge it as a fact and reality of our world and not a mental illness of some kind that needs to be either fixed or ostracized. You know, that's interesting because Tim admits he doesn't understand it. Tim, I'm not saying it's as simple as sending somebody to a psychologist. The act of sending somebody anywhere is very simple, but the psychology and the therapy could go on for years and years, and then it wouldn't be something simple. It would be something very much in depth with a lot of exploration anyway. So anyway, he has just a couple more lines here. These are challenging waters to navigate, and I think we need to encourage ourselves to be thoughtful in how we do it. Kind of a long post, but that's what I needed to say. Okay, Tim, I know you're saying this sincerely, and I respect that, but I was very clear in the program, and you acknowledged yourself that you were talking not about my intentions, but the way they may have come across. I do understand that people listen to controversial, electrically charged issues through the filter of their own emotions. And with radio, a show is often heard out of context as people turn the program on while driving, etc. I can only say that nobody who listened to the entire program heard me once equate transgenders with criminals. I even went out of my way several times to say that transgenders in school should be protected. The transgenders in school should not be bullied. My concern, as stated, was that with zero guidelines about determining the accuracy or inaccuracy of somebody's claimed intersexuality, men who are not transgender can claim that they are and can go into a woman's bathroom for dishonest reasons. And my other stated concern, even if one who sincerely views himself as transgender goes into a woman's changing room, the discomfort of the women must still be taken into consideration. When we talk about rights or compassion or allowing people to feel comfortable, we must make sure this applies to everybody. And we must be free to express our opinions. And yes, we do answer for what we say, but that judgment is only fair if we are evaluated according to our actual words and not the way somebody may have interpreted them. Let me say something else here, Tim. I remember a number of years ago, and you can still listen to this on my website, I had a guy named Mark Thomas on. He was an atheist, and we were arguing about the whole separation between church and state thing. And he was making the case about the cross here in San Diego on Mount Soledad. It should be taken down from public land. And I pointed out that there's nothing in our Constitution which says that there's anything wrong with having a cross on a hill. And he says, well, it violates the rights of people who don't want to look. And I said, well, then don't look at When you drive by Mount Soledad, just don't look at the cross. Look away. And he says, yeah, but Bob, if people see the cross up there, it might make them think that Christianity is a state religion. And my response was, oh, okay, so you're saying that we should pass laws based on what people might think about something? You see, people think all kinds of things. A number of years ago, I wrote this very long essay, and I wrote it for the Washington Times. And in the first of these, it was a series of four essays. My attempt was to have a civil, friendly, respectful discussion about same-sex marriage. And I spent almost the entire first article saying, can't we just have a conversation without calling people hateful? I said, when I meet somebody who's a gay activist or who's a liberal or who doesn't agree with the biblical position, I know they're disagreeing with Christianity. I know they're criticizing Christianity. I know they're sharing their opinion of Christianity. I never accuse them of hating all Christians. Why can't it work the other way? Can't we have a discussion? And I just said, whatever your position is, I respect that. And I just want to articulate mine. And I want to do it in a friendly way. And I want to lower the tone. And no thinking person could have read that article and felt that I was trying to do anything inflammatory. You know what was the first comment I got to that article? It was one line. Bob Siegel, you are a filthy bigot. Okay, my point, Tim, my point to everybody is we have reached a point in this country where you can say it in the nicest, most diplomatic way, and it just doesn't matter anymore. People are so emotionally charged. I'll still say things in as nice a way as I can, but there's a point where we just have to say, look, I need to be held accountable to my words, not the way somebody might have interpreted those words. Now, I did invite Tim to call back. Whether he does so, we're running out of time now, but maybe he'll call back again. But Tim and I also got into something else at the end of the show, because Tim always calls himself a moderate. Now, moderate sounds like a very nice word. Extreme right sounds like a bad pair of words. Extreme left, on the other hand, is a phrase you hardly hear. You listen on the media, you always hear about the extreme right. You hardly ever hear anything about the extreme left. You'll hear it on my program and on conservative talk radio, but in the media and the college campuses, you don't hear much about the extreme left. A lot of concern about the extreme right. Now, many who coin these kinds of titles have difficulty admitting that there is any such a thing as extreme left. That's sad, in as much as it is the left which keeps advancing toward its desired direction. You see, as the left moves farther left, our real, genuine center, by comparison, looks farther right. 20 years ago, most liberals, regardless of their view of same-sex marriage, would not have accused people of being hateful simply because they believed marriage should be defined as a union between a man and a woman. Old-fashioned? Sure. Behind the times? Yeah. Those descriptions may have been coined, but not hateful. Many who initially accepted abortion would not have imagined the day would come when there'd be such a thing as partial birth abortion. The right has not been moving. The left has. Now try to picture this on a chart or graph. The right's staying still. The left keeps moving more to the left. And then we have somebody that wants to keep calling himself a moderate, which usually means you're about halfway between the two. To stay halfway between one side that keeps moving left and another side that remains to the right, the moderate position has to keep moving leftward itself to maintain that ratio. Oh, they may not be so far to the left that they become Marxist, but they're accepting ideals that in the 60s would have been viewed as liberal. And today, those views are just being viewed as moderate. And they're made to seem that way by our liberal media, which denies being liberal. They say, oh, we're not liberal. We're just the mainstream, good old common sense that any thinking American ought to have. Yeah, well, in the liberal media, when people usually do try to really think, they get fired. But I'm not fired. Not yet. I'll be back here next week.
Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.